This is episode 4 of Emergency on Planet Sport with Energy and Climate Intelligence Unit. My name is Jonathan Overend. This is the motorsport episode. We're going to be talking about Formula 1, Formula E, Extreme E, which is a new concept for this season. Because when you go to something like an F1 Grand Prix, as I've been lucky enough to do, you see the scale of the logistical operation, and taking that from city to city in quite a short time frame is a huge operation. It's costly financially, but also on the environment. So what's motorsport doing about that? The answer is quite a lot, actually, as you're going to hear in this episode. I won't say a whole heap more because it's covered in our latest piece of performance poetry to get us into these pods. Hope you've been enjoying these, by the way. And here's Cecilia with another one. It is the motorsporting paradox. Enjoy.
The flying circus comes to town. Race against the counting clocks.
Gents, boys and girls.
The motorsporting paradox.
Full speed, foot down, max out. Full speed, full sound, foot down, max out.
Dirty image, well rehearsed, petrol burning, engine thirst, private jets, replacement parts, global air miles off the charts. Dirty image, well rehearsed, skewed perception, safety first. Always moving, always smart, innovation stands apart.
Full speed, foot down, max out.
Full speed, full sound, foot down, max out. Problems, yes, there's no denying. Emissions, yes, but that's implying this is the worst, a curse, a bane. From Monza to Melbourne, Spa to Bahrain. Circus, yes, indeed, a great weight. Stop for a moment, assess the debate.
Assess the debate.
Research, innovation.
Research, innovation.
Science, long range. Commitment. Net zero.
Net zero.
Commitment to change.
Full speed, foot down. Foot down, max out. Full speed, full sound. Foot down, max out.
Full speed, foot down, max out. Full speed, full sound. Foot down, max out. The flying circus comes to town, race against the counting clocks. Ladies, gents, boys and girls, the motorsporting paradox.
Well, I mean, I've always worked in motorsport and I've always been a sustainability expert. So for me, it's kind of like it's mixing these two environments that seem a bit kind of like paradoxical indeed.
My name is Julia Palais and I'm sustainability director for Formula E and sustainability advisor for Extreme E.
But actually, I think it's also where it gets the most interesting, because motorsport, obviously, throughout the world are really kind of like a source of inspiration and passion for billions of people. And that's where you have the opportunity to plant a seed if you showcase that these sports, don't only take sustainability seriously, but are trying to send a message, to raise awareness and to actually kind of like transform the societies in which we live in.
I had my question marks about working with Formula One.
My name is Solitaire Townsend. I'm the co-founder of a company called Futella. And Futella are the advisors, the expert advisors to Formula One on sustainability.
We're environmental experts. So when we got that call, we were a bit like, really? Really? And now it's some of the work I've been most proud that Futella's done, and just most encouraged to see this absolute bastion of what I thought was the fossil fuel industry turn around and say, we're about speed, innovation, thrill. We're not about fossil fuels.
I love it when people are passionate change makers. I love it when people really care.
Nobody comes to watch Formula One to see petrol. They come to see speed. And as long as you've got that...
You got me going now. Yeah, I don't have an off switch.
When F1 first approached Futella, we were a bit surprised as well. There's some dedicated F1 fans in the company, but almost feeling a bit guilty about it. Maybe we'll stick with working with the big tech companies that we do, like Google, and the big food companies like Danone, etc. But when we got into the conversation with them, our first question is always why? Why are you taking this seriously? What's driving you to this? Because if it's just a PR play, there's no way you're going to commit to what you need to commit to. And they spoke to us about the changes in their audience, the younger audience that's coming in, the diverse audience that's coming in, the millennials that are coming in, where this is just table stakes stuff. And the fact that there'd be a passionate F1 audience who might be a bit embarrassed telling their friends that they're F1 fans because of the carbon sort of halo, that was something which just isn't a good future for F1. And then also the excitement of future sponsors as well. There's a lot of sponsors out there who love the F1 audience, who love the incredible scale that F1 have to reach audiences, but who were also questioning whether F1 really had a strong plan for dealing with climate change. And F1 has got a super strong business case with new audiences who expect this kind of respect for carbon action and new sponsors who are looking for that kind of innovation.
Innovation. It's at the heart of F1 and really at the heart of this motorsport paradox. Formula One, despite its dirty perception, wants to be carbon neutral or net zero by the year 2030. Perhaps surprising, definitely ambitious. But that's where the engineering innovation comes to the fore. Nothing is too ambitious for Formula One.
So, okay, we think about motorsport and its engines and its burning petrol or diesel or some variation of those. How can it be green?
Here's Richard Black from ECIU.
But actually, the same manufacturers that support motorsport are those manufacturers that are moving as quickly as they can towards cars that are powered by electricity or hydrogen. And so they increasingly want to use Formula One and other sports as a kind of shop window for what they're doing with their road cars. That's kind of always been the case, really. But also, another great thing about motorsport is that the innovation is fantastic. One of the most innovative places I think you would ever find is the technical headquarters of a Formula One racing company. And of course, a lot of the problems can be solved by innovation and technology. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what motorsport can do as it puts pressure on itself to green what it does.
That was one of our first jobs, was to actually really look at where is the carbon, you know, what is the real carbon footprint? We've been around this long enough that we knew the cars wouldn't be a huge part of it, because all you got to do is watch a couple of races and see the paddock, see the scale of the circus that they take around the world to realise, yeah, well, there's only a few cars, but there's a lot of flights and shipping of all that stuff around. So we already knew the cars would be a small part of it, but even we weren't expecting it to be such a small part of it. So when we did the carbon footprinting for them, which was absolutely the first thing we did before there was any sense they'd be able to get to net zero, first of all, we had to work out, well, where are you now? You know, really, really going into the logistics, into the shipping, going into the weights, going into the sources of energy, going into the flights, and then only then starting to look at the cars. And actually, it turns out that the engines are essentially 0.7% of the carbon footprint. The biggest part of the footprint by such a long way is basically freight. Shipping the wonderful, thrilling, extraordinary circus that is F1 around the world. At that point, we became nervous again, because although the vehicles, the engines, are only 0.7% of the footprint, they're 100% of the brain print. They're the first thing everybody thinks of when you think of F1, is those machines, those extraordinary, constantly innovating machines. That's what you go to watch. That's where the thrill comes from. That's where the excitement, particularly about the technology, comes from, is those cars. So it would have been very easy and actually possibly even justifiable for F1 to say, no, we're going to work on our logistics, we're going to work on our flights. But they understood right from the beginning that that's 100% of their brain print, and they had to include the fuel within the net zero commitment. And as Futura, we simply wouldn't have been part of it if they hadn't.
And so to a massive moment in motorsport history. Formula One's plan for fuel consumption. Is it possible that something other than petrol can be used to power the cars? They say yes.
They've basically just said the petroleum age is over.
After the 2030 net zero pledge, the next target will be to develop a hybrid engine running on sustainable fuels.
If those cars, if those engines, if those super engines, if that technology is going to be having sustainable fuels, it's going to be fuel, there'll still be combustion engines, but combustion engines do not need to run on petrol.
Solitaire Townsend believes it's a game-changing moment.
They need to run on fuel. They're fuel-based engines rather than electric engines, but they don't have to run on petrol. And basically, Formula One has just declared the petrol age over, essentially, by saying these supercars are going to run on sustainable fuels. That, for me, is, oh, you know, that's worth all the work that we've done, all the work that they've done, because that is telling a story to the world that just no one else can tell. Ever since F1's existed, efficiencies in the cars have been absolutely crucial because you don't want to be carrying extra weight. So they have been working for decades on making those some of the most, they are already the most fuel efficient vehicles that there are. Any F1 car, any F1 engine is arguably the most fuel efficient vehicle you've already got on the planet for the very good reason that you don't want to be carrying a drop more weight than you have to around the circuit. What Formula One can tell the world about the future of the combustion engine, how Formula One can set a new standard for what the future of driving is, that even doing that, for me, makes it so valuable what they've done.
It's a further step change after the move in 2014 away from the 2.4-litre V8 engines to 1.6-litre V6 technology. Cleaner, but quieter.
A lot of people are complaining about the sound of Formula One cars now because they've all gone hybrid.
This is Williams development driver Jamie Chadwick.
But, you know, they've gone hybrid for a reason. And, you know, I think now a Formula One race, which... it's about 2 hours long, produces less pollution or less emissions than a jumbo jet to New York from London. So the conception is that it is just this mentally high emissions and leaves this massive carbon footprint. But actually, it's not massively the case. I think there's a long way to go. But yeah, I think the sport is doing as much as they can to do what they can to make sure that it's not as dirty as of a sport as, you know, it has a perception of being.
She won the W Series last year, a driver on the rise. All round to Jamie's place.
Ultimate dream still to race in Formula One. It's a bit of a way off yet. You know, still a lot to achieve, but yeah, that's the ultimate goal.
Hi, I'm Jamie Chadwick, and I'm a racing driver currently racing for Veloce Racing in Extreme E.
I'd grown up obviously in the country. When we were even in the Isle of Man, it was always very quiet, a very lazy lifestyle to live. You rarely see a car on the road, so it was always very a quiet life that we lived. And then suddenly, Isle of Man TT or the rally would come. I remember we'd sit on the hedge or the wall by our garden. Oh, yeah, too loud. And the kind of access you get to that kind of thing, you literally could touch the car if you put your hand out.
I remember my parents got us earphones, though.
Proper ear defenders, and my brother and I never wanted to wear them. Explains why both of our hearing isn't great.
I think from a young age, I had sort of something ingrained in me.
Yeah, we never wanted to wear them. We always wanted full sound, full sound, full sound, full sound, full sound. Aside from a sporting point of view, I think as a, you know, someone of my age, yeah, my generation, I think we're becoming increasingly more aware of it, but also are quite blindsided towards climate change and, you know, the effect of it and, you know, how important it is to be aware of. And, you know, I'm from a sport that notoriously doesn't have the best reputation for having the best carbon footprint, and I think it's something that I've always kind of had a conscience about, but was quite ignorant and, you know, unaware of the impact. So ultimately, when, you know, Formula E came about and now Extreme E, I think it was really exciting that it's something in my sport that I'm a part of, you know, as an athlete, but also is ticking that box to have that sort of better carbon footprint and have that sort of environmental aspect. So, yeah, it was a bit of a no-brainer in that sense. But what's sort of taken me back more than anything is how much I've learned and how much that kind of awareness has really impacted the way I approach, you know, my life now.
I think that if you look at who is the next generation of sport fans, we know that the Gen Z is all about sustainability. They are all wanting their services, the products, the entertainment they are interested in to have that very deep component of social responsibility, whether it's environmental or more kind of like diversity and inclusion and so on. That's kind of like one of the key requirements for them to be adhering to a concept, basically.
I was born in Bath, so pretty nice part of the country and the countryside. And then we moved to Isle of Man for a good sort of part of our upbringing. For both of us, we were always pestering our dad or parents to, you know, give us a go on a quad bike or even drive a lawnmower or whatever it was. And so we're always a bit like that. But yeah, it wasn't until I was 12 and my brother was 14 that he started in go-karts. And yeah, I sort of followed him slowly but surely into it. And yeah, I think I was 14 when I first got into actual car racing. Only recently have I found myself in a city in London. So yeah, always have been in and amongst the countryside and very lucky in that sense. So I've always been exposed to sort of more beautiful sort of areas of, you know, the country, and therefore maybe where my ignorance started, I guess, from the perspective that for me, everything looked pretty rosy. I sort of looked at the world with rose-tinted glasses, but was pretty unaware of the sort of diminishing effects of climate change and how rapidly it was impacting our planet. And yeah, I think a lot of things I noticed, even just moving to London with the pollution and yeah, how bad it is now. Yeah, it really has made a big difference to my approach. And it's interesting, I wear this sort of Whoop band, which is a fitness kind of tracker, and my sleep and my respiratory rate is so much better when I spend maybe a week or two back in the country or back home. And training I find a lot easier. If I'm running or cycling, I find training so much easier. Whereas when I'm in London, which relatively speaking, in comparison to some of the places in the world, isn't the worst, but I still notice quite a big difference respiratorily, in the sense of how polluted, you know, the air is.
Jamie's soon heading out of London on a global tour. Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg are among the supporters of Extreme E.
Extreme E has been created to fight climate change. It's so unique and it stands apart. This is a sport that has been created for that purpose, not for the racing itself. The principle of Extreme E is that we race all electric SUVs in the most remote corner of the planet.
The cars are actually super fast. They have a huge power.
It's on and on. The power, there's no much shade of power. You're kind of like 100% in kind of like in a few secs, and that's it.
But this is why Extreme E is completely unique.
Yeah, it's, well, completely new concept, Extreme E. So, yeah, for the motorsport lovers, they might have heard about it, but the majority probably haven't. And the whole concept is based on electric SUV racing off-road, which in itself sounds pretty cool, but with a twist. So we're going to be racing in, you know, remote exotic locations, mainly to raise awareness for climate change, taking us to places that need the extra awareness, needs of some attention. And we're going to be out there racing, obviously in these electric cars. Each team has one male driver, one female driver, and it's quite a short race, so it'll be action packed. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, the difference is that the vehicle will be running on an electric battery. And that's, I mean, an electric vehicle has, first of all, no tailpipe emission. And if the vehicle is powered by renewable energy, it's considerably reducing the overall emission of what we call the life cycle of the vehicle. So basically, it's kind of like the emissions related to its production, its life or use phase, I would say, and then to the end of life. And this varies in between 50 and 30%, depending on the type of vehicle and the type of countries. It's actually quite enjoyable. I'd say also quite difficult for the drivers. They often say that the cars, at least in Formula E so far, I'm sure in Extreme E already, they say that the cars are way powerful enough, but that it's actually quite difficult to drive. And one of the most important thing is the battery management, because that's all about kind of like how you will kind of like save energy and use energy wisely, which links obviously well to the challenges that we have in our daily lives of trying to use the right amount of resources.
I was first shown the calendar only a few weeks ago, and I couldn't believe it. I think it's all the cars, everything, everyone goes out on a ship, so a lot of the drivers might have to fly in, but ultimately we're all kind of transported on this paddock, which is going to be the ship. And yeah, it's going all over the world. So the first race is in Saudi Arabia. I think then we go to Greenland, Patagonia. Yeah, you name it, it's probably on there.
All the logistics of Extremis is going to be done by boat, which is going to, again, quite revolutionary from the motorsport perspective, because I mean, normally things, because of kind of like the time in between the races, have to travel by air. So this is absolutely amazing. And the boat is going to be used also as a vehicle to research and to study the natural environments in which we will travel in. I think the boat is absolutely central to the concept of Extreme E. The boat is actually going to transport the racing SUVs, and the boat is kind of like a sort of like way to embody the sustainability mission and vision of the series, because it's also going to be this technological laboratory to study the maritime environment and the different environments in which we will race in these different geographies, showcase the issues of climate change, showcase that there are different ways of doing things, of kind of like of living your lives in a way, and showcase that there are kind of like there are ways and solutions through the legacy programs that can be taken.
So when we go to a lot of these locations, there will be an element of the weekend or the build-up where the drivers, the teams will be engaging in some sort of climate change activity, whether it's picking up plastic off a beach, or helping build sand dunes or do certain activities to protect their landscapes. So I think that's quite exciting, something I'm really looking forward to being a part of, and just a little thing that we can really sort of help with. I think, like you said, it's not easy to make big change, but the more little change you can make, and if everyone does, then it's going to, of course, have an impact.
So the most important impact is, first of all, making sure that we will have assessed all the sites that we go in and that we're going to race in from the environmental and social perspective. So making sure that we won't damage the local biodiversity or disrupt the local communities. And then after we race, or kind of like in parallel, we always put together some legacy projects that are each time relevant to the local kind of like culture, needs and expectations and so on, to basically leave a positive impact behind. So for example, in Senegal, there's this tree planting in mangrove initiative that we're doing in partnership with the local association. And each time this really refers to what it takes to help the local community and leave something much more positive that helps their own resilience, really.
The main thing also is it's raising awareness. And like I said, my awareness of these kind of issues was really, really bad before this championship. And the whole process has been a learning process for me. I'm learning a lot more. I'm becoming a lot more aware of it. And then all sorts of little things that might change in my day-to-day life will, of course, make a difference as a result of that. I always think, oh, what's me turning the lights off going to really do as a difference? But I think every little thing adds up, and I think when you realize that, I think that's quite an important important thing, and makes a big difference.
The importance also is that the type of vehicles that is being used, the SUVs, is a sign of kind of like of the time, in the sense that fossil fuel SUVs are the most polluting type of vehicles that you can drive, but they're also the most demanded by the consumers, and they're also kind of like the most attractive for the manufacturers. So you really have the opportunity to completely switch and revamp what automotive can look like, and on an individual level to make a real sustainable choice if you drive an electric SUV.
The future of the automotive industry. It's a hot topic the world over. We're some way off, but we're heading electric. The question remains, is motorsport, in particular, would they ever? Formula One?
For me, as somebody who is a sustainability person first, and F1 fan second, as long as it's net zero, as long as it's sustainable biofuels, I am all up for them keeping the combustion engine.
I think Formula E has come in at a really good time and filled this sort of gap in the market. But I think the problem is electric cars are only just becoming fashionable. So for Formula One, which is the staple of motorsport, for that to become all electric and fashionable is quite a big ask. So I think there's a long way to go yet. But ultimately, I think by the time, regulations change, potentially we'll be looking at something like hydrogen or something down the line that really does completely change it. And so the investment that Formula One could put into something like electric racing could be short-lived.
The problem is not the combustion engine. The problem is what it combusts. So there is absolutely no problem with the innate technology. The problem is what we pour into those cars at the moment and what they pump out because of it. Pour something else in. Pour in a superfuel, a bio superfuel, particularly if it's an ethically sourced bio superfuel. Whole different scenario. Now, I am not a fuels expert. So Formula One are drawing together a set of experts from within the industry, from academia, to really look at, is there any way that this could even make the cars go faster if we make this? You know, this is where they're always at. They refuse compromise. They refuse to say, well, we will, you know, we'll make things a bit slower, we'll make things a bit less exciting. It's like, no, like they will sit there. It's a blank piece of paper. There is no answer. Nobody has pushed the boundary that says, how do you get a supercar, a Formula One car, to drive at the speeds or faster than they currently do on a biofuel? Nobody's done that before, which means if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be F1.
And that's not just a handy soundbite. F1 leads on so many areas, on engineering, on research, on its ability to take big, heavy decisions, which can make a real difference. Like broadcasting the races.
Just think about the logistics of the broadcasting when you're going on city to city, country to country, with completely different energy grids, in often different technological rules, etc. And you're having to broadcast live from all of these cities around the world.
We still watch the presenters there, but the production team are not. F1's host TV operation used to travel to all the races. Not anymore. Big change.
One of the biggest part of that logistics footprint of the tonnage that they were trucking around the world is a massive broadcasting hub.
Sustainability advisor and Futera co-founder Solitaire Townsend again.
A huge physical hub full of the technology needed to make sure that you can watch that stuff live around the world. And they realised quite early that just that massive, great big box just wasn't going to be able to be part of their future if they want to be net zero. They're going to have to find another way. So they started working and they had a really accelerated two-year timescale. Within 2 years, they were going to go from there being a very small box that goes country to country. And actually most of the people and the equipment sitting back in the UK using super fast broadband technologies and satellite technologies to get it all on board. So they'd have a big studio in the UK, which could be 100% renewably powered, that would be doing most of the heavy lifting and then just a small on-site broadcasting. So, you know, two-year time horizon. They, of course, are really pleased they had that plan, because then when COVID hit, and suddenly a whole load of travel bans came in and a whole load of folks weren't comfortable travelling, they were able to take that two-year plan and do it in 8 weeks. So, and they wouldn't have been able to if the plan hadn't have already been there because of climate change. So their net zero plan was already to do it in an accelerated timescale. And so they were able to activate that plan immediately. I think it's something crazy, like it's taken 70 tons off the freight that they're taking around the world. And I'm not sure about you, but I've noticed no interruption of service. It's just this quality broadcasting. This is the kind of thing that F1 can do, and F1 will do.
It can also contribute in many areas across society. And it has done.
You've got a whole load of some of the world's top engineers who do not like sitting twiddling their thumbs trying to get a 0.0001% efficiency improvement. This is their Everest in terms of making this innovation challenge. So I don't see a lot of doom or exhaustion around this issue. I see a lot of quite sparkly eyes of a lot of engineers super excited about how they are going to overcome this. And when you saw how quickly F1 and the teams pivoted in COVID to start making respirators and working with universities to see how they could bring that engineering. That's what it's like that all the time. You know, you've got a bunch of some of the world's best engineers absolutely gagging for the next challenge, be it COVID or climate change.
Yeah, you just have to go into a Formula One factory these days to see the level they operate at. It's unbelievable. I think it was really shown during the first lockdown when, you know, a lot of the F1 teams rallied together to really help provide PPE and support. And between a few of them, they helped create a ventilator for patients that were really in need of it. So it's incredible to see the level that they operate at in Formula One transfer into other stuff. And yeah, I think that kind of avenue is fairly, in my opinion, unseen, but is one of the biggest parts of what makes the sport so special for me.
A special sport doing some special things. It can always do more, though. That 2030 net zero target is a huge ask, particularly when it's down to the teams to help deliver something that's been set by the governing body. And fingers, well, they'll always be pointed, especially at the private jets and the flying of emergency wings, for example, at a moment's notice. The sport gets that. That's why this has been so refreshing. That's why it's being so upfront.
Some people would argue that things like F1 shouldn't exist, that Hollywood shouldn't exist, which we also work, as Futella, we work with BAFTA, and we work with a number of the production companies as well, that these things, that the carbon footprint is too large for what they generate. So F1 has got a big carbon footprint. It's got a lot of shipping, it's got a lot of flying, it's got a lot of generators, it's got the cars, it's got the people. But its footprint is dwarfed by your average manufacturing company. F1's footprint is dwarfed by whoever made your shoes and by most of the companies that made the food in your fridge. It's still, although it has a large carbon footprint, it still has got nothing like the carbon footprint that a major multinational food business or clothing company would have. So we have to ask ourselves, is the value, the joy, the thrill, the energy, the innovation, particularly the technological innovation that F1 brings to the world worth the carbon footprint? For me, the answer is yes, if they get that carbon footprint to net zero.
Final word on this to Jamie Chadwick. Her season will take her to all corners of the planet with the Veloce Extreme E team. But she knows, her friends know, the planet relies now more than ever on them.
It's our responsibility now. It's my generation's and the generations beneath me's responsibility to make the difference now. I think we've got so much opportunity to ruin it, to be really blunt. You know, what we have, you know, as consumables available to us, makes it almost readily available for us to really destroy our planet if we wanted to. So I think it's a huge amount of responsibility that, you know, our generation needs to take. And yeah, I think every bit that we can do is going to be important. But I think that mainly stems from an awareness point of view, because I can tell you a year or two ago, I wouldn't have had any knowledge of this being a big issue. But now, you know, my perception's changed and my awareness has changed. And I think that whole learning process is the most important thing.
Next time, coastal erosion and the threat to Lynx Golf.
I'm concerned. I think my main concern is the lack of awareness and recognition of golf clubs and probably sports clubs in general of what's coming our way. And unless you're aware of that, how can you prepare?
It's a special report from the east coast of Scotland on episode 5. Don't forget all 8 episodes of the series are available now to download as a box set and follow us on social at Planet Sport Pod. This has been a 9419 production for Energy and Climate Intelligence Unit. Oh, and I just wanted to put this in at the end before we go, because it's really important. You may have noticed the 3 main contributors to this motorsport episode were Julia Palais from the leadership team of Formula E, Solitaire Townsend, who advises Formula One on sustainability matters, and Jamie Chadwick, who one day dreams of being a Formula One driver. Well, it's Solitaire's dream that one day we see more women in more roles at every level within motorsport, including on the grids. Have a listen.
A lot of Formula One drivers in the past came through go-karting, and lots of young girls are really interested in cars. Their parents won't let them go-kart because it's so dangerous. And there's still a thing where parents are prepared to let boys risk themselves more than girls. So that's changing. So a lot of girls fell out of the sport at that level around some of the more dangerous pieces. But today you've got more of the drivers coming in through gaming. Really interestingly. And actually what you'll find is, you know, no one's worried that their daughter's going to crack her head open on the computer game. Might be worried about other things happening to her head. And so I think you're actually going to see some of those barriers. You know, we're getting to the point where we'll see much more people coming through gaming into maybe Formula 3, that kind of thing, and then working their way up. You know, we have to get there. We absolutely have to get there, because there is absolutely no reason why it's mainly men There's no genetic reason. There's no skill set reason. They just, you know, it's just historically been the way it is. That's the next big thing that needs to change.